We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a church notice read by Kathy Clugston.
Children from the parish will be presenting Shakespeare's Hamlet in the church basement on Friday at 7 p.m. The congregation is invited to attend this tragedy.
And our thanks to Jude Holby in Cornwall for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Andy Hamilton and Andrew Maxwell. And opposite them on my left, Sarah Pascoe and Jeremy Hardy. Andy, who is refusing to say TTFN to the SNP?
Well, as the election steamrolls towards us each day now, every party finds a new gong to strike, and the Tories have found the Scots-Nats relationship with the Labour Party. And so this week they brought out this poster of a miniature Ed Miliband in the breast pocket of Alex... Oh, I nearly said his name out loud out there, which you're not supposed to do. That's bad luck.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. No, you're supposed to say the Scottish politician.
Oh.
Because if you do, something awful will happen, which is sort of what's happened to Labour. They've been wrong-footed, temporarily at least, by this sort of challenge to rule out a deal. And I think this is maybe a time when we'll find out whether or not Ed Miliband is a real politician or whether he's just doing it as a holiday job. Because a real politician spots the risk and then says, yes, I hereby rule out any deal with the SNP, and then after the election does it anyway. I think what's going to happen is until he says something, the Tories are going to keep trying to conjure up this nightmare scenario of him in number 10 Downing Street with Alex Salmond pinning him to the ground and sort of force-feeding him haggis.
His defence could easily be, I will not be in the pocket of Alex Salmond, I will be in the pocket of Nicola Sturgeon, who is the leader of the SNP.
It's not even going to be in a pocket. It'll be a sporran.
It'll be in her sporran, which would make for an interesting poster.
I think the mistake that they've made is that poster that's supposed to have put us off Ed Miliband makes him look so incredibly sweet.
Yes.
Because he's really tiny, and I actually think there's a sitcom there or a kids' programme, like, PM in my pocket, he'll keep you company. And then the child comes home and is like, oh, no, Ed, I'm being bullied at school. And then Ed would give him advice. He'd have a really tiny voice, like, oh, they were mean to me when I tried to have a bacon sandwich. PM in my pocket, they'll keep you company.
It's very disingenuous of the Tories because, basically, if the numbers stay the same, someone's going to have to make a deal with the SNP.
But Nick Clegg said he was ruling his party out of any government involving the SNP, and actually that sentence also works if you remove the words involving the SNP.
But the thing that the Tories are trying to emphasise is that they might force Labour to abandon Trident, and then that's going to backfire because people are thinking, well, good.
It's all right.
Because what use is that to us? So actually, it's going to increase the SNP vote, if anything.
I don't like the idea of Trident backfiring on us, though. I think that's... I don't really know how it works.
It's all right. It's just a stick with 3 points. That's all it is.
The Ukraine got rid of their nuclear weapons and nothing went wrong for them.
Yeah, but the other way of looking at it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We'd all like to be hippies, but some of us have to live in the real world. Geopolitical mayhem, Jeremy. Well, nobody's ever going to use these crazy expensive metal sausages under the sea.
You sure?
Apart from anything else, the technology that's going to be put into them at vast expense will be outdated. Like, there's no way of knowing within 5 years we could all have an app on our phone that just says, find my sub.
Surely the thing to do is not spend the money on Trident, but not tell the enemy that you don't have Trident. But in terms of your fears about nuclear apocalypse, I was filming years ago outside a nuclear base, and every now and then there was this dull crump sound. And we went up to the guard on the gate. We said, could you do something about that noise? And he went, oh, yeah, they're gassing the rabbits. And we said, well, why are they gassing the rabbits? He said, well, otherwise they chew through the wiring in the missile bunkers. And he said, and we're just a bit worried, you know.
This is an absolutely true story. I once sat next to a British scientist at a dinner, and I said, what do you do? He said, well, I'm one of the world's leading experts on nerve gas. Right. And I said, oh, what an extraordinary thing. Who did you learn that from? And he said, well, there was a wonderful old scientist that they made a special lab in London for him because he was so brilliant at making nerve gas. But he didn't like working in the lab because it was a bit shiny. So he used to go home to his farm in Wales at the weekend and make nerve gas in the kitchen and and bring it in a bucket covered with a tea towel. And he'd bring it in on the train. Ed Miliband has refused to rule out a coalition between Labour and the SNP after the general election, despite a recent Conservative Party poster depicting Miliband in the pocket of former SNP leader Alex Salmond. Conservative Chairman Grant Shapps said that Labour and the SNP had signed a prenup and were halfway down the aisle, before adding that Nicola Sturgeon had opened the door for a deal, which begs the question, what kind of a builder puts a door halfway down an aisle? Political forecasters predict an SNP surge could claim seats held by Gordon Brown, Alistair Darling and Charles Kennedy. This news came as a surprise to many who had completely forgotten who any of those people are. 2 points to Andy Andrew, who has promised to free up education.
Free schools?
Yes.
There always seems to be more types of schools in England the whole time. It used to be comprehensive, then there's state and there's free and then there's independent and public, private, which is public. I don't know. Does anybody? I mean, anybody?
You're right that it's very complicated. I have to say, in Denmark, we just have one system. So what happens is, at the age of five, right, you're given a box of Lego, some bacon and a passport, and and told to make your way to another country and take over one of their topical panel shows. And that has worked. But you're right, we only have one system.
Free was a brilliant piece of marketing, wasn't it? Because it sounds great, doesn't it? It's a free school. But actually, it's not really free. It's free in the sense that a lot of them are free from oversight, and in some of them they're free in the sense that they're free to teach creationism as if it's a science, and they're free to segregate boys and girls,
and some of the teachers are free of qualifications.
I'm sure there are, you know, there probably are some free schools that are quite good, but I wouldn't be amazed if there are quite a few that have been set up by the kind of parents who always think they know better than the teachers and who think that their little Augustus would not be setting fire to the school quite so often if he was being more stretched.
It's those parents who become magistrates and independent counsellors.
My mum's a magistrate.
Is she?
Yeah.
Is she also an independent counsellor?
No. She's a right laugh. You'd like her.
Damn, that's my ideology in tatters.
She just really wants to do something for her community, actually.
What, by sending them to prison?
Not all of them.
Some are merely sent to the colonies.
But it's just this idea that you keep... I mean, basically, they keep reorganising health and education every generation, thinking this will make it better, and they should have learned that reorganising never makes anything better. It's like, you know, thinking that a new kitchen is going to make you happy. That's not really what's wrong with your relationship. It's not the kitchen. You put all your thought and energy... Maybe if we get granite work surfaces, everything will be OK. You're not looking where the roots of the problems are. It's not about... And it's the same with health and education.
I'm really worried now. We've just ordered a new kitchen and I genuinely have not paid attention. So.
That preparation island, that can really tip the balance.
Preparation Island, that sounds like a really lame reality show. We're just an island where people just get ready.
But the real issue with the free schools, it seems to be that they have been set up in places where school places are not needed. And Shadow Education Secretary Tristram Hunt says that the free schools have created areas where there's been a 200% increase in the number of pupils taught in classes over 30. Although I do think if they're over 30, they shouldn't be taking up school places. What has David Cameron just become the first Conservative Prime Minister to do? To do with education?
Oh, he sent his daughter to a state school.
Yeah.
Graco.
It's one of those schools that all the parents say, oh, it's a lovely, lovely mix. It's such a nice mix, which means that one of the children's parents is lower middle class and one of them's a daughter of an African prince.
In a speech this week, David Cameron promised to build 500 additional free schools if the Conservatives win the election. The plan will mean an extra 270,000 school places for parents who want their children to grow up thinking Jesus killed the dinosaurs. The Prime Minister promised to build the schools by 2020 and start fracking underneath by 2021. Labour has said it would scrap the scheme and introduce a new education system to include Scottish history, Scottish geography... ..and Gaelic. Nancy Cameron is delighted she's going to Greycoat because her best friend is going there. Her best friend is a non-executive director at HSBC. And is on 10 grand pocket money a month. 2 points to Andrew. Sarah, what's in line to go online?
YouTube and The Guardian and The Telegraph have all said that they will put stream an online debate between the five major parties. And I really like the idea of it being on a computer because I like the idea of the kind of banner ads. You know, the thing that you're looking at then influences what they think you then now want to buy because of cookies. I like the idea that you're watching these debates and then suddenly along the side it's saying, would you like to meet pathological liars in your area? Yes, please!
I think the online thing would suit Ed Miliband, do you not? I already think that he responds to any question with a look that says, you have temporarily lost your connection, so...
It's a buffering
phase. Yeah, buffering is always a blue circle, so they would have to change it to different coloured circles throughout the course of it in the interest of balance, wouldn't they?
Yeah, for balance and it being YouTube, should have a Tory, Labour, Lib Dem, the regional nationalist parties, the far left, the far right, and a kitten. Oh!
I love this. If a moderator is a cat playing a banjo. Yes. Ed Miliband. He does look tired, doesn't he?
I just worry. It's like making the most bullied boy at school head boy.
Yeah, exactly. What's inside him? What'll happen when he gets through the door?
No, it's about how other people are to him. I want to protect him from that.
Come on, man. Look, imagine Ed Miliband in a room with Vladimir Putin. Putin will be chasing him around the table like some sort of creepy prison version of Benny Hill.
Cameron just keeps saying, "Oh, look, what I'm interested in is the campaign, not a television programme." And you think, "Well, isn't this television programme quite a key part of the campaign?" And Basically, what he's saying is, "Look, what I'm interested in is running the country. I was born to run the country. I like running the country. Don't want to stop running the country. And I don't want any distraction by people going into polling booths, putting crosses on bits of paper, and voting and trying to vote me out of power. I'm not interested in being voted out of power. I'm interested in running the country forever and ever and ever. That's what I'm interested in."
Well, he's no chance of that anyway, because there's a blonde buffoon waiting behind him at all times. So, I mean, you know, it's...
Andrew, even if... I'm right here.
Sarah, if only you ran this great city.
I would vote for you.
Hey, so I would love to be a dictator. And I think you should all vote for me in your last act of democracy. And there'll be no more free schools. What I think is so odd about this debate, and it's only struck me today, that imagine if you were going for a job interview, like you want to be an electrician, but your job interview involves sitting next to the person who has the job you want. Mm. That's what's so odd about it, arguing against someone who's already proved they can do it, and you're just going, I reckon I can do better, I've got no proof. Mm. Can I have the job?
Yeah. I'd love to vote for you, though. I think it'd be fantastic. Yeah, and actually, I do think it's that difficult to win people over. I launched on International Women's Day the idea of a party that put women and children first, and I had a sort of fantasy cabinet. I introduced them on stage, and we had lots of fantastic notions. The thing I got the biggest cheer for, I said, when I'm Prime Minister, everybody will get free cake on their birthdays. That was the
really good. We definitely have to get rid of Trident, though, because I will let it off when I'm on my period. I promise you, we're all dead.
Are we... world destroyed by a giant tampon.
So are we not going to get... I was rather looking forward to the empty chair debate.
Oh, yes.
I thought that could be quite... I could see it's a risk for Cameron that if the Tory party is represented by an empty chair and does quite well... I mean, I love the way Labour overplayed the Labour hang. You know, Cameron is on the run a bit about, you know, being chicken and everything. But it's a very new Labour that they went that extra yard and said, we're going to make it a criminal offence for a Prime Minister not to take part in a TV debate, which I'm all for, because on that basis, Blair would go to prison. Because he always refused point blank, didn't he?
I think there are other things that would condemn him more greatly.
I think when he
finally faces the International Criminal Court, I think that will be asking for other offences to be taken into consideration.
But hey, I found out why. So my friend was telling me that she'd read Tony Blair's autobiography, and apparently before big speeches, he would drink lots of fluid and not go to the toilet, and it's supposed to make you more dynamic. And my friend was saying, oh, you should try that for stand-up comedy. And so I did, and I got cystitis. Those of you who will have had it will understand, but if you haven't, it just makes you very sad. And it's not just the physical discomfort, you need to be near a bathroom all the time, but it also makes you, like, agitated and a bit irrational. And looking back, it does explain a lot of Tony Blair's decisions. Yeah. Like, that entire war could have been avoided with some cranberry juice.
Enoch Powell. Enoch Powell always said he always did a speech on a full bladder, and that's how he got that whiny, awful, pained expression that we remember so clearly from his Rivers of Wee speech.
A solution to the impasse over the TV election debates might have been found in the form of an online debate, which could be screened on YouTube later this month. The debates would be hosted by a consortium involving The Telegraph and The Guardian, because if there's anyone who really understands the internet, it's the people who run the dying print media. Labour have so far responded cautiously to the proposals, and indeed everything else for the last 5 years. This shows that Westminster is really moving with the times, said a man wearing a ruff and stockings carrying a black stick. I'll definitely watch it, said one internet user, as long as it doesn't clash with any important pornography going on at the same time. 2 points to Sarah. Jeremy, whose private emails does America want to CC?
Hillary Clinton. Yeah. It is a bit weird. When she became Secretary of State, she didn't have a separate government email, which everybody is supposed to do. You're supposed to have your private family stuff. And you're supposed to have your government stuff. And she didn't separate them, and she's deleted a lot of them. And she says, don't worry, all those ones are just irrelevant family stuff. A lot of them are to my husband. And then his spokespeople say, Bill doesn't use the internet at all. He favours oral communication and seldom with his wife. Her story isn't standing up, but basically, my benchmark of these things is if something is what I would do, it's probably a bad idea if it's done by one of the most important people in the world. Because you can all say, yeah, but I'd probably do that because it's easier than having two phones or having to do different things on your smartphone, just have all your emails in together. But if you think it's a good idea, it's probably not the best thing for one of the most important people in the world to do.
The reason is that she wanted all her business on a private email was because if it was in the government emails, which are encrypted and the Russians and Chinese can't get into them, but they are vulnerable to a Freedom of Information request. And she wanted her to keep all her stuff secret. That's the tactic that's deployed, isn't it?
To be honest, I think she's a busy woman, and I completely get that. And she deleted 32,000 emails. Probably 31,999 of them were LinkedIn requests. Do you know what I mean?
But the thing is, that the idea that US government emails are secure, you can't open The Guardian without a huge pull-out section of American government emails falling out on your breakfast table.
I'm amazed. I'd assumed that all sensitive communications were being sent by Pony Express now. I'm amazed they're still using emails after WikiLeaks.
Well, it would never have happened under George W., would it? All his communications written in crayon and stuck on the front of the fridge.
I mean, it was a surprise when it turned out our emails were completely transparent and anybody could snoop on them. I mean, before Snowden, we thought they were secure. We thought what we were sending through the internet was secure documents through space for free, instantaneously. Because right from the start of the internet, the icon for an email was a sealed envelope.
Mm,
right?
That's right.
It turns out it was mail, it was free, but it was a postcard.
Yeah.
I'm going to give another point to anybody who can tell me why Iran were surprised to receive letters from America.
A bunch of Republican senators decided to basically circumvent the White House, who are in intense negotiations with Iran, and say, don't even think about coming to an agreement with our president because we'll change it as soon as we get rid of him, which has embarrassed even the three or four sentient members of the Republican Party. The thing is, people talk about conservatism, and America's kind of different. The Republicans aren't the exact sister party.
Well, they have got more and more right-wing. They used to be the Liberal Party that freed the slaves.
Yeah.
And then from then on, they got more and more and more into golf.
Hillary Clinton has come under mounting pressure over her controversial private email account after her office revealed she had deleted around half of her emails before releasing them to the public. During her time as Secretary of State, Hillary used the email address clintonemail.com, where she conducted important state business as well as answering questions about birthday cards. President Obama has denounced a group of Republican senators on Monday for warning Iran that any nuclear deal could be a temporary one, calling it an attempt to undermine the administration's foreign policy. 47 Republican senators signed the open letter. It ends with three kisses, but that turned out to be the signatures of the senators from Alabama, Georgia, and Iowa. At the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Andrew have got 5 points, but so too have Sarah and Jeremy. We start round two with an advert from the Leicester Freecycle website.
Does anyone have a wardrobe they can dismantle? I'm looking for my teenage daughter.
And our thanks to Helen Skemp for sending us that. Andy, whose lack of control has been driving people to sign a petition?
Right. I'm not sure I have a proper opinion on this story yet, because I don't actually know the facts, but that's sort of an irrelevance, because nobody really waits for the facts anymore, do they? I mean, Lord Hall of the BBC, who said that they're launching an investigation to ascertain the facts after having suspended Clarkson ahead of the facts. Meanwhile, on the other side, you got 500,000 people who, again, don't know any of the facts, who have decided to start a petition for Clarkson to be reinstated. So presumably, if it transpires that Jeremy Clarkson sort of beat someone senseless with an iron bar, that 500,000 people are going to just think that's health and safety gone mad. It's a lot of fuss. I mean, if this show was cancelled every time you punch someone.
Yeah. That's true.
The thing I don't understand, I'm puzzled as to why they cancelled all the shows. It's a bit like, you know, because one of you's been a bit naughty, you've all got to stay behind, you know, all the cancellation costs of those three shows, particularly if you want to send a signal to an artist that they're not as important as they think they are, you just make the recordings anyway. I didn't quite follow that.
But it is a problematic thing. I don't know what the BBC will do if they lose Clarkson. Where on earth are they going to find another middle-aged, middle-class, white ass? It's...
Look no further, my dear.
Typical fighting talk from old Fisty Toxman. Oh, yeah, she hits people. It's not funny. Height of her, she's at ball height.
Yeah. They had an interview with a former Stig.
How did they find out who he was?
Well, this is exactly. He was this sort of unctuous, simpering toady. And the origin of the word Stig is that it was a name for a new boy at Repton Public School where Clarkson went, this is how on the edge, rebellious and anti-establishment and out there Clarkson is. He hangs around in Chipping Norton with Rebecca Brooks, that preposterous cheese farmer from Britpop days, and the Prime Minister. He makes Nigel Farage look like Rosa Parks.
On Thursday, Je suis Clarkson was trending on Twitter.
Yes, exactly.
How annoyed would he be to have a French phrase? You know, I liked all this talk as well that ITV and Channel 4 have previously tried to poach him. I thought poaching's too good for him, is it?
Top Gear is not a show that can work on ITV because 60% of it is slagging off cars and saying, oh, it's a rubbish car.
Oh, well, because all the adverts.
That's their ad breaks.
He's absolutely dead right. With the American version of the show was a stinker because you keep slagging off the Chevrolet Bell End. It's the Lincoln Incontinental.
But
if you can't...
The Pontiac Adequate.
Can I just say the Daily Telegraph reported that the BBC had banned all staff from discussing this issue and then... So I just want to apologise that we didn't get that memo. I feel really bad about that. An online petition has been signed by 700,000 people calling for Jeremy Clarkson to be reinstated after he was suspended from Top Gear after allegedly throwing a punch at his producer. The row about the lack of hot food after a day's filming happened at the Simonston Hall Hotel in the Yorkshire Dales when the three Top Gear presenters arrived at 10 p.m. after a long day filming Last of the Summer Wine. 2 points to Andy. Andrew, why do you need to watch your BMI to work for the NHS?
This is about the NHS telling their staff to not look like their patients.
Pretty much, yeah.
Long story short, do you know what I mean? It's not very reassuring, is it?
No, don't be fat, that's it, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, if you go into a restaurant and the people serving you are anorexics, you know the food's crap. There's nothing wrong with a fuller figure, you know? As they say in Belfast, well upholstered. Right? Front and back bumpers. Lovely. But there's nothing wrong with that. And, you know, some people like somebody a bit rounder, some people like athletic, whatnot. You know, I'm not aesthetically here to judge, but, you know, health-wise, I mean, the NHS, I mean, they have to do something, don't they? I mean, there's people on the right criticise the NHS. It's a nanny state. But if the NHS was a nanny, you'd sack it.
I like this. The UK is now the second fattest country in Europe. Number one, this is fantastic, is Hungary.
If they want the staff to lose weight, they just make them eat the same food as the patient, surely. My dad was in hospital, and I remember they served up this food. It wasn't very nice. And I said to the nurse, this food's not very nice. And she said, I know, it's from Cardiff. As if that explained it. It's come from Cardiff.
Are they big, though? I mean, NHS staff?
No, but it's to stop that situation. So there's two things, isn't there? I guess if you're a health professional and you're telling other people, the patients, to lose weight because it's better for their health, then if you've got experience of having done a similar diet or having to lose weight, then you can really help people in a proper way. And the other thing is, if you're being told to lose weight by someone bigger than you, that's a difficult conversation.
But you still know that they're their doctor. I mean, it's not like you're being told to lose weight by the ice cream van, man.
No, but if you went in the opticians and there was a Labrador in there, you'd think, oh. Do you know what I mean? Mind you, barbers always have terrible hair, don't they? Because they spend too long mucking around with each other's hair once they close up. You know that they just go all weird with the clippers and start taking bits of each other's eyebrows out and things like that.
Hey?
Barbers! Well, I can only speak for the Kurdish barbers that I go to, but they've all got weird hair. They all just do bits of weird stuff.
Do you reckon after the shop sign turns in and they pull down the blinds and the barbers, they get all the hair off the floor and stick it on their faces and pretend they've got 20 different beards?
I think they probably do that. Or they stuff cushions and supply IKEA.
NHS doctors and nurses will be sent on slimming courses while overweight patients will be offered free cookery lessons in a bid to tackle Britain's obesity problem. If the scheme is successful, it could see obesity in the UK decreased by a third, the best thing to be reduced by a third since Top Gear. Overweight patients will be referred to Slimming World, which is either a weight loss clinic or the most depressing theme park ever. And if you're thinking of losing weight this Red Nose Day, please do remember a bath of beans is a fundraising opportunity and not a serving suggestion. 2 points to Andrew. Jeremy, have a listen to this.
When I wish eyes are smiling, sure 'tis like a morn in spring.
That being played at the right speed.
Jeremy, whose laws weren't written on tablets?
Ah, it's a story about Ireland and drugs. A man got off his conviction for being in possession of methylcathinone, which is also known as cat or meow meow, because that's how young drug users are these days. What noise does cat make? Meow meow. What noise does cocaine make? Hi, I'm Sebastian. I work in financial services. And this fella got off because his lawyers, which is what they're supposed to do, in fairness, figured out that the 1977 Misuse of Drugs Act in Ireland is unconstitutional because it allows ministers to keep adding new drugs without a vote in both houses, which are
the Dáil and the
Seanad. I have very little Irish. I can say hello, goodbye, thank you, good night, and gas board in Irish. That's all I can say. If you're interested, it's board gas.
The result was extraordinary, because for about 24 hours, all drugs were legal in Ireland.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I was here.
But here. Also,
I was here. I only found out after it was over.
But you can point to all kinds of glitches in law. At one point, they actually banned heterosexual marriage.
That was my favourite, because while drugs were being made legal, the Irish government made heterosexual marriage illegal. Did you read about this?
Yeah, see, what it is, in Ireland...
It's been a great week for the confirmation of national stereotypes, hasn't
it? Yeah, so the actual law in Ireland is written Osqueiliga in Irish. That's the actual law, right? But obviously everybody is fluent in English, and almost all public discourse, including in the High Court and whatnot, is debated in English. But if a barrister really wants to screw over another barrister, they can flip into Irish. And there was basically a misspelling that banned straight marriage. Temporarily.
I'm beginning to wonder now if Father Ted was a documentary.
You may say that, but I couldn't possibly comment. Now, back to your hideous imperial past, Englishman.
Are you an Irish speaker, Andrew? Can you speak the language?
We can all speak a couple of fuckle. You've got to learn Irish, but that means just a couple of words. You learn Irish by law from the age of 4 to 16.
All right.
But you go from very basic conversational Irish straight into epic poetry.
All right.
You know, there's none of this, how do you get to the train station? No, it's a great language. The Irish for road is bóthar, and that literally means the way the cow goes. It's a great language. The biggest main road to me where I'm from in Dublin is called the Tong Le Gae Road, which is sort of an anglicised version of Tong Le Gae, which literally means arse to the wind. And it is a very windy road, but it used to be donkey fields. And if you know anything about donkeys, in a breeze, they'll always stand with their arse to the wind and block their face from the wind with their arse.
OK, I so didn't know any of that, but...
There is no word for yes or no in Irish.
Is that why Northern Protestants are so assertive in using the word no? They're just so proud to have that at their disposal.
They're like, no! And the Catholics are like, well, maybe.
Ecstasy, ketamine and crystal meth were all briefly legal in Ireland this week after the Court of Appeal ruled that their addition to the 1977 Misuse of Drugs Act was unconstitutional because the Irish Parliament had not been consulted. It was feared that the discovery of the loophole would lead to pandemonium on the streets of Ireland, or, depending on your point of view, the best night out since the day before the invention of Catholicism. People in Ireland had 24 hours to take as many drugs as they could. The Irish government said they would rush through emergency legislation to close the loophole the minute they stopped dancing. In other news, passenger satisfaction on Ryanair flights rose 95% on Tuesday. At the end of round two, the scores are Andy and Andrew have got 9 points, but so too have Sarah and Jeremy. We start round three with a cutting from the Crawley News.
Police in Three Bridges have made an arrest at a Harvester restaurant after receiving reports that a man there had a knife.
And our thanks to Colin Buckley in Copthorne for sending us that. Andy, have a listen to this. Andy, who has blurred the lines between inspiration and infringement?
Well, this is a story about copyright and intellectual rights. Pharrell Williams, who I presume is Welsh, I don't know, and Robin Thicke, who might be quite thick because he spells it with an E, so I don't know. But the accusation was that they'd taken a Marvin Gaye song and then kind of replicated it and put some horrible lyrics to it. But, I mean, there are only so many notes... stumble into, you know, the odd pattern, aren't you, that is...
No, it's easy. Look, with technology these days, if somebody goes, that it sounds like my song, no, it doesn't. Yes, it does. No, it doesn't. All right, let's ask Shazam. Let's see what Shazam thinks, which is the modern equivalent of in the cowboy movies. Remember when there was a horse and they didn't know whose horse it was? And once you stand in the middle and whoever the horse comes to... Yeah. Belongs to. But that's it.
Sounds like quite a dull film, if I may say so.
Cowboy movies are boring.
In the Old Testament, you just cut the baby in half, didn't you?
Yeah.
King Solomon, any dispute whatsoever, it could be about Leylandia trees, intellectual property, copyright, anything like that, and Solomon would say, I'll cut the baby in half, and one of them would just settle.
I didn't know about this. Did you know about this song? I didn't know, but it's very sexist and unpleasant.
I think the worst lyric, if I had to pick one, and there are lots, is he says, I'll tear your arse in two, which obviously is very extreme, but I also think it's about context. Like, if you're driving a van and you shout out of the window at a stranger, "I'll tear your ass in two," obviously that's out of order, that's aggressive, you're going to ruin that person's day. If you go up to somebody that you don't know in a nightclub and you say, "Oh, I'll tear your ass in two," they should call the police.
Isn't everybody's ass already in two?
It's not completely in two, is it?
Well, I mean, kind of. It'd be really hard to go otherwise, wouldn't it?
Are you saying... So, in what is in fact the threat in the song is to tear an arse into four, so the arse looks more like a hot cross bun?
No, what it means is the woman was born with a deformed bottom and is unable to go to the lavatory properly. He is a prosthetic surgeon who is going to carry out a very difficult and potentially life-threatening buttock-separating operation. She's got a conjoined arse. That is what he's saying. But feminists are looking to be offended and absolutely...
You think, Jeremy, because I had to watch it today, so the news was going to come up, and there's the Blurred Lines video, it's full of topless women.
Yeah.
And now I'm not opposed, as you know, to the existence of topless women. But as the minute I watched it, all I could think about was the importance of a good thermal vest. That was the... The family of Marvin Gaye have received a payout of $7.3 million after a jury ruled that the 2013 song Blurred Lines infringed the copyright of Gaye's 1977 hit Got to Give It Up. Robin Thicke denied plagiarism, claiming that he was channeling the late 70s feeling, or as it's otherwise known, arthritis. In order to make a decision on plagiarism, jurors had to listen to the song over and over again in what has to be the most literal example of making the punishment fit the crime. Marvin Gaye's children stated that initially they weren't aware their father's song had been ripped off, but later heard it on the grapevine. Of course, appropriation is a common technique in classical music. For example, Richard Strauss used the funeral march from Beethoven's Eroica in his own Metamorphosen, while Stravinsky quoted a theme from Schubert in his Circus Polka. And you can hear much more information like this on Radio 3 whenever you're struggling to get to sleep. 2 points to Andy. Andrew, why is working in a Filipino call centre so brilliant?
Oh, this is... number one, I've never got through a Filipino call centre. I used to get through the Geordies, and then it was Bangalore in India, and now it's back to Newcastle.
Hang on, are you ringing the call centres?
Sometimes ringing them. Sometimes I'm there. I only work on the weekends. they're training Filipino call centres to understand British sarcasm. Mm. Why would you do that to people? Their job's already crap. They're in somewhere on the edge of Manila in a building that isn't air-conditioned successfully. And next thing you're being taught that almost all the calls that you think you really helped, you know, Darren from Weymouth, is that, yeah, that's been absolutely wonderful, Manuel. Thank you. Ding, ding! I got another happy one, boss. In fact, they're miserable.
Maybe it's their approach there, because they said that they found that they have an aptitude to it, which most nationalities don't have, and maybe they're employing it, ringing people up saying, "Oh, I bet you're really happy with your current service provider, aren't you?" I don't think.
Sarcasm, though, you actually have to learn it. I didn't realise. My boy, when he was about 5, he discovered what sarcasm was. And we go, "Oh, thanks, son." He'd stop and go, "Is that good thanks or bad thanks?"
People think Oscar Wilde said sarcasm is the lowest form of wit, whereas what he actually said was, "Oh, sarcasm, that's a very high form of wit." Not.
I don't understand the purpose of training them to recognise sarcasm, because surely if they hear sarcasm, that means they've already lost the sale. So it doesn't do them any good, does it?
Well, I think all they need to work out now is passive aggression and awkward politeness, and then we'll all buy whatever they're selling.
Yes, and fake compliments. "You look lovely tonight, Margaret."
Okay, that would scare me if I was on the phone. I would
Yeah, words not to use in call centres. "I know what you're wearing."
That's it.
When you get married, if you don't take your partner's name, like my wife is still Asha,
and it is not Andy.
Fantastic. So there's a fantastic unintended consequence, which is it's the perfect screening mechanism for cold calls, because if someone rings up and says, "Am I speaking to Mr. Asha?" you immediately know it's a cold call. And then you've got lots of options. Like, you can say, I'm sorry, no, Mr. Asher isn't here. He's on the run from the police. From the police because he firebombed a call centre or stuff like that. But it's the perfect... It's That's the perfect good. Screening device.
I pretend I'm an old Greek man, genuinely.
For a cold call?
Yeah. So if somebody comes in, hello, can I speak to Mr. Maxwell? I go, Maria! Maria! She's coming, okay? Just put the phone down. It's so good.
No,
I've had
good.
People call back, is Maria there now? Maria! Get out of the bar! Maria! She's like a fish! Maria! Maria never comes to the phone. She is lazy. She will not leave home.
I like that we all have a technique, because I always know it's a cold call because they can't say my name. So, is Mrs. Toxic there? Call centres in the Philippines believe they have the edge when it comes to attracting British business because their employees understand British sarcasm. When asked if he felt his knowledge of sarcasm had helped him find work, one Filipino replied, oh, yeah, it's been really useful, while rolling his eyes and making air quotes with his fingers. In their training, Filipino call centre staff are taught to speak English with no accent, so they are indistinguishable from native English speakers. You've been listening to the News Quiz, and I've been your host, Imelda Marcos. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they would like to share?
I've got one. So this is a tweet from the Transport for Greater Manchester, and they tweeted, every street, Manchester city centre, closed due to police incident, and then 10 seconds later tweeted, sorry, there is a road called Every Street. It is not every street in the city centre.
Sandy, this was sent in by Mwenna Hancock in Nova Scotia, who saw it on the BBC News website. A Canadian man has been rescued from a snowstorm after being mistaken for a seal. Charlie Parker was shoveling snow near his home in Nova Scotia when he spotted a dark shape moving through the snow. When he came closer, he found 73-year-old Gerald Whitman face down on the road. He thought I was a seal, Mr. Whitman told CBC News. On behalf of all seals, I'd like to thank him for his interest.
Let's take a look at the final score. Sarah and Jeremy have got 13 points, but this week's winners are Andy and Andrew with 14. Before we leave you, here is a reunion invitation from Bristol University sent to us by Carol Clapperton.
Alumni are invited to celebrate the 50th anniversary of their graduation. The day includes a reception, a tour of the campus, lunch, and at 4:30 p.m, a free talk on how to write a will.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Andy Hamilton, Andrew Maxwell, Sarah Pascoe and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Cathy Clugston. The chair script was written by James Kettle, Simon Littlefield and Tom Neenan, with additional material by Robin Morgan and Max Davis. The producer was Matthew Oldham.